Sal here of the Vault of Horror, and this week I'm doing something a little bit different because I am going to be having a conversation, doing a little interview with my dad. And the reason that I'm doing this is not a class project. The reason I'm doing this is if you've read my blog in the past, you realize that I am a big horror movie fan, or big horror fan, because I grew up in a family of horror fans. My mother was reading Anne Rice novels and watching slasher movies when I was a little boy rolling around on the carpet. And my dad, in particular, has been a lifelong fan of monster movies and horror movies and things like that. And so I just thought it would be cool to kind of go back to the beginning and talk to the person who helped mold me into the strange individual that I am today. So I would like to welcome my dad into the Vault of Horror. Welcome, Dad.
Oh, glad to be here.
We're going to talk about a lot of things because my dad, not to make him feel old, but my dad goes back, naturally, a lot further than me, since as most people's dads do. And he remembers and he's been through a lot of stuff that I think a lot of the people who read this probably have only heard about. I mean, I'm sure I get some older readers, but, you know, it's kind of cool because, for example, the first thing I wanted to bring up is that you you were a reader of the original Vault of Horror, but also the Tales from the Crypt comics,
all of
right?
them, yeah. I was a big fan of that.
The EC comics, right?
Right, right.
And what was it like? Because they weren't really around for that long. I mean, there was only for a couple of years, right, that they were even sold.
Well, the stories were pretty entertaining, and they always had gruesome endings, so it was really cool to read as a kid. There wasn't anything like them, really, except that not even in movies. They didn't have many stories like that. These people ended in agony.
Well, they were all revenge stories, right?
Right, it was always... right. Somebody coming back from the grave, or somebody left in an awful situation that you really can't get out of. Things like that.
But there was a sense of humor, right, to all the stories, too, wasn't there? There'd be like a really dark humor to it.
Yeah, it wasn't really more serious, more true to life type of stuff you see today, like, as they say, ripped from the headlines. But there was some humor because some of it was so scary and grotesque that you had a laugh. You know, but it was good reading anyway.
And you had to be what? How old? Well, less than 10 years old.
When
right?
they were in their heyday, I had to be maybe, I would say anywhere from 10 to 13 years old, maybe.
So this is going back to the 50s.
Mid to late 50s, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, how? I mean, like you were saying, how actually there was stuff in there that was far beyond what you would find in any of the movies back then, the right. violence. And
right,
the...
they were stuck on monsters that grew out of radiation because there was that paranoia about the A-bomb. And all the testing, so they made up all these stories about these creatures that would mutate. But they weren't into more, slasher type things like they're doing now. It was all monsters and stuff.
Did your mom and dad or anybody like think it was weird that you were reading them? Because a lot of kids got in trouble back then, from what I understand, for reading those comics because they were so, you know.
Not at all. I don't think I collected them in the house, but I don't think they would have had any objections anyway. They were pretty easygoing. Yeah.
Do you remember when they got into trouble because they had to stop making those books? They got that's why they came up with the comics code where comics couldn't show things like that anymore.
Well, I was just a kid, but I really wasn't aware of that until you're telling me right now.
But that's why there's people now who covet those original EC comics and hunt them down, and you got to read them when they were first on newsstands.
Yeah, right.
Do you remember the famous Monsters of Filmland magazine?
That magazine I just used to peruse through. I didn't really buy many of them. I was familiar with any monsters they featured on them because they were always in current movies or past movies, you know, even going back to the 40s.
Well, this is what's interesting to me, where I don't know if you've ever heard of the term monster kids before.
No.
But you may not even realize it, but you're one of them. And I'm going to explain what this means.
I can imagine what it means.
Well, because you had this whole generation, which you were a part of, where, in the 50s and the 60s, after World War II, these classic monster movies became very popular from being on television, and they became even possibly even more popular than they were when they first came out, you know.
Well, when they started showing them on TV in the later years, it was really something because it was something new. I say, oh boy, I saw that. I had to go to the theater to see this. Here it is on TV now. So it was kind of a, you know, a real advent, you know, something really new
But
at the time.
you had this whole generation of boys growing up being, I mean, you weren't the only one being into all these monster movies, excuse me, and into all these early horror movies. It was like a whole kind of cultural thing, and I think it continues to this day, and it's why there's so many people that continue to be into horror movies. I think the whole real interest in horror movies with fans, diehard fans, I think started around that time, thanks probably to television.
Yeah, and well, in the then it started to change. You're talking about monsters. Then it started to get the people were the monsters later in the
Yes.
later horror movies. And in the '60s, it was Hammer Studios, you know, recreating Frankenstein and Dracula. And they also had they were doing a lot of Poe stories with Vincent Price. So they after the '50s, they really got away from that giant spider and, you know, 100-pound butterfly type of things, you know. You know, they got over the A-bomb paranoia, you know, after the '50s, really. It changed.
Well, the like you were saying, the interesting thing that happened later is that horror movies became not so much about monsters anymore. They were about
People.
people,
Yeah, the people were the
which
monsters,
is kind
especially
of,
now, you know, these days.
yeah, well, that kind of Psycho started
Yeah,
that, right?
right. I would say that. But Psycho was a film that they didn't even deal with not only psychotic, a maniac, but you know, they even dabbled. You know, they went a little into like cross-dressing there. You know, a little bit. So there was nothing like it before that, and that sprung a lot of movie, a lot of copies after that, and also it changed the horror scene. You know, like I say, that started the slasher movies pretty much.
And did you see that when it first came out? Because you would have been
Yeah, there was
a
a line.
teenager,
Oh,
right?
yeah, I was around 15 when it first came out, and that also started where you had to go into a movie and see it from the beginning. People were going to a theater and watch a movie and just see it again and leave at the part they came in on, which
I just can't understand
that's
it.
it sounds silly now, but that's what was done,
Yeah.
you know, because unless the story was really deep, which sometimes they weren't, you know, but that's the way they used to do it. But that ended that. And that started that whole trend of, you know, getting movie times and seeing when they start. And there was a line going around the block for Psycho when it first came out. It was a huge hit.
Yeah. Psycho was really big. And actually,
It was huge.
I wanted to get to the 60s stuff, but before that, I wanted to talk a little bit because you also were lucky enough to remember all the horror TV hosts like Zacherly and
Right,
those guys, right?
that was a great show. That was funny, and it was just so funny the way he would interject himself in a scene where he cut into the scene that and he'd do some kind of a little skit that had something to do with the scene when it was interrupted. Like if it was guys going through a desert, he'd be in the desert and he'd say something funny, you know, something
Right.
comical would happen.
If for people who might not be, I think this is a big New York thing. If people listening aren't from the area, you know, every area would have their horror guy, you know. And in the New York area, it was a guy
Zachary.
called Zacherly, the
Yeah,
cool
I think it was
ghoul.
John Zachary is his
Yeah.
actual name.
And he was on, you know, in what, I guess the 50s, 60s, 70s, right?
I would say maybe late 50s, maybe into the early 60s. He wasn't on very long. It was a number of years, but not very long. I think it was like Saturday nights, like around 11, 11:30. It was late night
Mm-hmm.
TV.
And so you, what made you, what got you interested in seeing this stuff, even as a little kid and watching this stuff on TV? Was Uncle Barry, your brother, my Uncle Barry, the same way, or was it the both of you, or just you?
I'll tell you the truth. I don't know if he was. I never even thought about it, really. I know I was the one who would watch these movies. I don't ever remember any watching with him. If he was any kind of a big horror fan, never even thought about it. So I really can't say. I know I was so into it, you know, from the '50s on.
was there one movie that really that you remember being the one that that got your attention? Any movie in particular, maybe?
Well, I'll tell you something. I don't know the very first horror movie I saw. Now, the original The Thing came out actually in 1949. Now, I doubt very much if I saw it that year. I was 4 years old.
Yeah.
But when I first saw it, that really made an impression on me. It wasn't even so much the monster itself, the claustrophobic atmosphere of that movie. Everybody, like, down a hallway, and this thing is on the other end of the hallway, right behind that door, and they're all, like, waiting for it to come out, especially at the part at the end.
Yeah.
So I'd have to say that might be one of the first horror movies I saw that made any kind of impression on me. And actually, today, it would be Tame by today's standards. But as a little kid, I'm guessing I had to be maybe 6 or 7 years old when I first saw it, maybe in the early 50s.
There's so many people from that era and that generation that picked that movie. It's I don't know if you've ever heard, like, John Carpenter or George Romero in interviews.
Yeah, well,
and stuff.
He made it.
Yeah, well, obviously.
Nothing like that.
But you loved that. The remake, too, is one of our favorites,
well,
right?
You know, the first one was a lot of atmosphere. I mean, there were killings in there that you didn't even see. The people there were he hung two people in the greenhouse by their feet, cut their throats. Now, you didn't even see that back then. If the movie was made, not so much the remake, but if it was made in later years, they might have shown that.
Right.
But you had to use your imagination a lot. Like I say, that was really atmosphere in that movie. Being just secluded in that compound where they were with this thing roaming around. And, you know, like, what room is he in? It was very scary that way.
Well, they couldn't even show that kind of stuff if they wanted to. You know, I mean, they had to get around it and do other things, which I think is why a lot of those movies are so cool, because they had to be creative and think of other ways to scare you besides just showing you all this stuff. Yeah.
You know, I'll tell you a comment. The funny thing about that movie.
Which one? The original thing?
The original thing, yeah. The two guys that he gets in the greenhouse and you know, cuts their throats, hangs them upside down. Now, they mention their names. Now, when I'm first watching the movie in the beginning, before that scene, I'm trying to figure out who those people are. And I'm looking at everybody in the cast. I can never figure out which two they were. I'm saying, okay, who's missing from this point on that was in the earlier scenes? And I could never, you know, just a funny thing. I can't figure out who they were.
But, well, if anybody knows who they are, send us an email so we can figure it out. Anybody out there. But I wanted to actually get to Night of the Living Dead because that interests me a lot. But before that, what would you say, because you were into all the the giant monster stuff in the 50s and the Hammer stuff in the 60s. What were some of the real favorites of yours from that time, from when you were still a kid, you know what I mean?
Tarantula in the 50s, that was with Leo G. Carroll.
Yeah.
That kind of got me. The makeup effects on him at the very end.
Oh, when his face is melting.
Yeah, that made an impression. I was a little young kid, you know. And also the monster itself, not the monster, but the guy that was bitten or something, what he becomes, that broad, he looks like kind of a distorted wolfman type. I can't even describe it. That made an impression. The other movies were good too, like 20,000, The Beast from 20,000 Phantoms, Fathoms. It wasn't so much that it's scary, it's just the effect.
Yeah.
You know, him coming out of the water by the New York waterfront there.
Yeah, Coney Island, right?
No, I think it was. Well, it ends there. It ends in Coney Island. But that's Lee Van Cleef killing him at the end.
Oh, wow, Angel Eyes.
That's him. Yeah. He's supposed to be at the very end of that, the marksman. The beast is roaming around inside the workings of a roller coaster.
Yeah.
And this guy is the marksman they pick to shoot this, whatever they have to shoot it into a certain part of his body. And, you know, naturally he does, but it's Lee Van Cleef. It's just the effects in that and the story itself that was entertaining, you know, and to see how it moves, you know, that's a special effect. You know?
Well, Harryhausen.
I didn't even know who it was back then. I didn't care, you know. But I recognize the effect from other movies. They always use that for prehistoric monsters.
Right.
That was always used for any prehistoric. It was like a rule.
He was the guy, though, you know.
And I didn't know of him. Or,
it came from beneath the sea, right?
Right. It was an octopus, yeah, destroying the Golden Gate Bridge. Yeah. That was a good one.
But and wasn't it Clint Eastwood in the in Tarantula? Wasn't
he was in one of them? Yeah, he's. I actually forgot. I know he's in one of them. He played another part where he's a marksman.
Yeah, I think, or he's a pilot.
Yeah, something like that. And he makes his screen debut in it, just a small bit part.
Well, I wanted to get ahead a little because we talked about it, but in the 60s is when, you know, a lot of things started to change in everything. I mean, not just movies. And, you know, you got to live through all that and you got to see movies showing things that they never, you know, would show before. But obviously, you got to see Night of the Living Dead. In a movie theater, right, on a date with mom, right? And it was a B movie, right? Literally, it was the B feature.
Yeah. It played opposite a movie called Slaves, I still remember, with Dionne Warwick.
I always wondered what the A feature was.
Yeah, it was Slaves. And I didn't expect anything like it. I figured, you know, B movie, cult feature.
It's interesting to me because, and you know, you're proof of this, before then, horror movies... A big audience was children, you know what I mean, and with a movie like Night of the Living Dead,
they didn't rate movies, so you could see a kid like myself could see any horror movie because it really wasn't. I don't know, maybe some of it was questionable, but a lot of it was really nothing, you know, to disturb you.
It was scary, but it wasn't anything that was gonna like scar you for life.
No, not like now.
Right, but the thing with that, like I've read things about Night of the Living Dead where. Because people didn't know.
I didn't know anything
about
it.
But they would, you know, how you'd leave your kid in the theater to watch a movie and go watch something else. So they figured, well, this is a monster movie.
Yeah.
And there would be cases where there'd be a theater full of little kids watching Night of the Living Dead and just freaking out.
I think a lot of people were caught by surprise with that movie because I could swear I heard a couple of people leaving that they were disgusted. They started eating people.
Right. You never saw stuff like that.
I looked at it and, my God, I didn't expect this. And if there was any little kids in the theater, they must have been carrying them out in droves. But that was really not suited for kids. And I don't even know if they rated movies back then. You know,
they were just starting.
At least R.
They were just starting, but I don't think that had a rating anyway.
Right. That was, it had to be like 67, 68.
So mom was there with you and you would be what, like maybe 23, 24 years old?
Yeah, something like that.
And did she, like she was also a fan, like she also liked that kind of stuff too?
It. Yeah, she always went to see horror movies. She never had any objections about
so
it.
So there was never an issue of, her not wanting to see the things you like to see, right?
Right. No, we agreed on that.
Well, and actually, I wanted to ask you about that too, because now after that movie and going into, you know, on from there into the 70s is when you really start getting some pretty demented stuff coming out.
Yeah.
So, but you still, a lot of people that were fans from the earlier days just lost the taste for it, but you still loved it, even as the stuff got more intense and more violent and stuff.
Yeah, and a lot of it would be tame to our standards, but back then it was really something, you know, something entirely new. You know, it was these like Halloween, Friday the 13th. They started getting into that type of thing.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, everything, yeah. Just even the original Texas Chainsaw, that was, from what they made of it from sequels and remakes, that was nothing compared to what they came out. But when that first came out, it was very scary. There was nothing to compare it to,
right?
As far as that genre, but the later movies that they made of it were even more intense.
And actually, just for a second, I know we've been talking a lot about movies, but the other thing I think that's really cool is I also grew up reading horror novels too, and a big part of that is because you and mom were reading that. You know, mom was reading Interview with the Vampire and the Vampire Lestat, and you were constantly reading Stephen King, and I remember
still like horror novels. Yeah.
I was 12 years old when I read Pet Sematary, and that was probably my first horror novel. So, I mean, you've also always liked to read horror books too.
Yeah, I still do.
Stephen King, I know you were a huge fan.
I still like horror stories.
What was the first Stephen King book you read? The Shining, I think it was.
Jeez.
I remember us having this really ancient, worn-out copy of The Shining in the house for some reason.
The first Stephen King. I don't think it was Carrie. It might have been The Shining. don't know if that was his second movie. I'm not sure.
Well, Carrie was his first book.
I don't think I read it. I certainly saw the movie, but I don't think I read that. I know I read The Shining. It's just a question of if that's the second book or the second movie that they made of his books. I can't remember which. But I read most of them, you know, since that time.
What is it about Stephen King?
Well, some of his books, I mean, he's got a great imagination. Some of his books are kind of wordy. He fills in a lot of stuff. He pads his books a lot. But it's just his way of writing. He's got a terrific imagination for horror. And there really wasn't anybody writing horror quite like that around the time in his heyday, you know, back then.
Well, he wound up becoming, you know, as far as fiction goes, he's got to be like the wealthiest writer in America.
The most prolific, too, I guess.
You don't really hear about people who write like horror or science fiction or that type of stuff getting to be that successful most of the time.
Right, and there were so many horror writers. Clive Barker's the only guy maybe that comes in second to at least to making movies about his books.
Yeah, especially over the past decade.
But as far as converting books to movies, he's got to be, in that genre, he's got to be the best one.
Well, to get back to the movie stuff, one thing that happened in the 80s is you finally had the chance to rent the movies you wanted to see, right? Now, people who are young, who are very young, they can't really comprehend the amazing transition that was. If you could never remember a time when there wasn't a DVD player or a VCR in your house, it's really hard for you to grasp because you were able to watch whatever movie you want, if you could find it, anytime you want. You can pause it, you can fast forward it. So how amazing was it to be able to watch, to pick out, you know, to go and find these horror movies and watch them at home?
Oh, that was great. I didn't know which ones to get first. They had a lot of obscure movies I never even heard of from, the 70s and before. It was just incredible. And, you know, naturally other types of movies. I was into dramas, if they were good, comedies. But to be able to do that with every type of movie, certainly that was a big thing.
I know. I remember when I was a kid, all the movies that you and Mom would rent that I wasn't allowed to watch.
Some of them you saw. I don't think we should have shown you too. I got to admit that.
Well, I wanted to mention the Exorcist story because I actually, on the Vault of Horror, on the sidebar in the introduction, I talk about that time with the Exorcist when you and Mom showed me. I was wondering if maybe you could tell that story from your point of view. When you let me and Christine watch the movie and what happened?
Well, I don't know. I forget if it was a tape or if it was on TV.
I think it was a tape. Well, I was 8 years old. So, well, maybe we didn't have a VCR yet. So, yeah, that would be about like 84, 85.
It was just on TV.
It might have just been on TV.
And I was upstairs. I know that I was reading a paper or something. And the both of you come upstairs, sounded like Oliver Hardy. And we were hysterical. We were laughing. I think it was the part where she's in bed and she didn't transform yet, but she just did that growl and her neck swelled. You know, her eyes kind of rolled back.
Yes.
You know? So it was really early on in the movie. She didn't even transform yet.
Well,
you gave up ship kind of fast.
We were begging. That's the thing. We were begging to see it. Mom especially.
Yeah.
And she finally just gave
you heard
up
about it and you were curious,
And it was when she rolls her eyes back in her head, we just couldn't deal with it and we just ran upstairs.
It's a scene where she's in bed and she's rolling her head from side to side, like a kind of growl comes out of her.
Yeah.
And her neck swells.
So yeah.
That part I think it was.
Well, because, you know, we learned our lesson that way. And it's kind of funny because I did the same thing. I did the same thing with Jack because he was begging me to watch.
You saw it?
No, not that movie. I wrote something about this a while ago. He was begging me to watch Return of the Living Dead.
Yeah.
And I said, because you can't. I said, you know, it's because he saw the glow in the dark box, caught his attention. I said, this is no good. This is not good for you. And he's begging and begging and begging. And I said, finally, I thought of that story. And I said, there's no way he's going to make it far into this thing. I think he just needs to learn the lesson the hard way. And he made it. He made it about 15 minutes in, 20 minutes in, up to the part where the corpse is in, you know, the medical cadaver is in the locker starts screaming and banging on the door.
Yeah, that would do it for a kid.
He lost it. And he tried to convince me that he wasn't, that he was just tired of it or he wanted to do something else. But he was terrified.
I
felt like I had to do that or he wouldn't. And to this day, he remembers it. And to this day, he understands that there's certain things he can't see.
That's intense for an adult to look at.
Actually, that's one of the ones I remember you renting. I would hear them. I would hear you and Mom, you know, watching movies in the basement. Sometimes I'd hear Mom screaming. And I would be upstairs wondering, trying to picture in my head how horrific these movies must be, you know?
You're talking about what could affect a little kid. Now, to put things into perspective, when I was a kid, we used to go to this theater on Church Avenue called the Beverly.
In Brooklyn, this is.
Yeah, in Brooklyn. And they'd show a lot of the... Now, this was, say, mid-50s or so, late 50s. I'd say more in the mid-50s. And I saw one of the Mummy movies with Lon Chaney Jr.
Right.
Now, that's tame. That was really nutty. This guy in bandages limping around.
Right.
But that got me... That I couldn't sleep that night. I got kind of the heebie-jeebies, whatever.
Right. You know?
And that's tame. Now, you could imagine a kid looking at stuff they have today or even, you know, not too long ago in comparison.
Yeah, no way should that be good for kids.
So it gives you an idea what effect it could have.
Well, so was there stuff... So you were saying how maybe you thought like you showed us a little bit too much when we were kids.
I don't know. There might have been some movies that, you know, we shouldn't have watched. Obviously turned out all right.
Yeah, well, I mean, you obviously wanted to pass it along.
It's a funny thing when you have a kid, you don't know, you got to wean a kid into horror. If you like them yourself and you don't want your child to be afraid of them, that they're only movies, it's ticklish because you got to see how the child takes to it.
Right.
You know, and how do you do that? There's only one way to find out, you know. If he spooks at a certain thing, you say, okay, you can't watch something like that.
Yeah.
Let me bring it down a notch or whatever.
It depends on the kid, I think. I mean, we've had play dates with, you know, with friends coming over to play with the kids. And, you know, the kid, I've seen kids get freaked out over Star Wars. I mean, that's I swear I've seen it. Because they've never seen anything beyond, you know, Barney, you know. So they see something like that and it blows their mind. But whereas, you know, the kids, thanks to me, can handle a lot more than that.
Yeah.
Because they get conditioned to it, I guess.
Yeah,
but
you gotta go into that gradual, that's all, see how the kid takes it.
But I remember actually getting to the specifics of the movies and stuff. I know Evil Dead was one that you discovered thanks to VCRs.
I rented that myself one night, and I had no idea about the movie. I just saw it in the video store, and I rented it. And I said, "Oh my god, you got to see this!" I rented it again just to show Mom. And I don't know if you guys. I don't even remember if I showed it to you.
I was too young, but I remember hearing about it, and all you would tell me was. All you and Mom would tell me was,
see this.
Well, you would tell us you can't. There's no way you could see this.
Yeah.
You got to wait till you're older. And, of course, that got me so curious.
I showed it to Mom. And that was some. That really made an impression on me. Because a lot of the movies back then, that was, say, what, early 80s?
I think? 81, I think it is.
And a lot of the movies back then, where they were still hung up with the slasher stuff, but this was something different. This was like demons possessing people and... That type of thing. But, you know, the way they made it, the way it was filmed, lame. When a horror movie's bad, it's really bad. But this was good. It was good quality stuff.
Yeah, and I know The Thing was another big one, the remake of The Thing.
Yeah, I have that.
And Dead Alive, the Peter Jackson movie, right?
That was really like a comedy.
But
it was so gross.
It was total comedy.
You had to laugh. It was so gross.
But I remember that being, and I was old enough. By that point, I was already like, you know, in high school, and I remember, if I remember right, I think you rented it, and I rented it completely independently, not knowing that the other person had rented it.
I have it on tape now, recorded.
It was really because of that cover. It just grabbed your attention, and the face coming out of the
But the
mouth.
Movie was so wild. That was really comical.
Totally, yeah, but it was really good.
There's a thin line. It goes to show you, even those movies, they try and make... as gross or shocking. You know, there's a thin line where it just becomes comedy. You know, it's over the top.
Well, what about, you know, the stuff that's around now? Because you still, even to this day, I know you still rent horror movies. And you still go to the movies and see them, and you know, you haven't been put off by, you know, how they are now.
If it's entertaining, if it's well made, and it's a good story, and you know, it jolts you, it's still entertaining.
But I mean, how do you feel about it now compared to the stuff you remember? It's so different. The kind of movies they make now, obviously.
Well, when I was a kid, it was suitable for me because, I don't know, back then, maybe adults thought it was kind of dull or, you know, lame, boring. But for me, I was a kid, so it impressed me. I was entertained. But as I grew older, I grew right into that stuff that, you know, when it became more,
right,
you know, intense. And
it's like horrific. They grew up with you. The movies grew up with you.
Yeah. If now, a little kid might not be suited to it, but, right, you know, I grew into it. Yeah.
And what are some of the ones, like, recently from the past few years that are like, new ones that you really like?
Oh, man. Well, it'd have to be Nightmare on Elm Street series.
I mean, even more recent than that, though. Like, just even, like, the past couple of years of stuff you've seen. Like, I know we were talking about, what's some of the things that we talked about that you saw? What was it? I know there have been a couple of recent... Well, we went to see The Wolfman, obviously.
Yeah.
We went to see that, but... Like Saw movies or anything like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like from the past few years.
Yeah, some of them go a little far. That's really like, it's like torture.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could get your fill of that. You know, it's,
yeah, I can. There's only so much of that I can
take. Yeah, it's a bit much. But I tell you, there's a lot of titles. I get movies through Netflix. Some of them I don't even remember. But a lot of them have to do with situations, people trapped, people being held hostage, and...
you like Wrong Turn, right?
Wrong Turn, the Wrong Turn series, yeah. Got to jog my memory a little.
With the cannibals and the inbred weirdos.
Right, Wrong Turn, some of them I have. Freddy and Jason was a good one. Aliens, going into science fiction. But there are so many. I even own some of them. I can't even remember what they are. But I just like them if they're well made. You
know? There was the Jennifer, right? The Dario Argento, the Masters of Horror episode. I remember you telling me
one was good. I forget that director's name.
Dario Argento. Argento, yeah.
Yeah, there's one called Pelts, was very good. There's a couple of them I rented. I think it's from a Showtime series or something.
Yeah, it was Showtime, right.
Yeah, originally I like that Showtime. Type of stuff.
But see, now it is possible to be a horror fan and go through the years and not get sick of it. Because I know some people only like it from when they were kids, or, you know, they'll only like the stuff of today, and they won't. So, like with me, I always had an interest in all the different eras of horror. Like I can watch anything from Nosferatu up to you know. Something like The Descent.
Yeah.
That's all
another good one. Now you're mentioning names. I, you know, like I say, I see so many of them. Another one was The Ruins, you know, that type of thing. That's not really about monsters, but it's just like an awful situation that it is a horror movie. You know, things like that.
Right. And now, you know, you grew up with it. Thanks to you, I grew up with it. Now I get to write about it on a daily basis, and I'm doing the same thing you did, which is I'm passing
it
on to my
genetic.
Kids.
It's probably genetic. It's got to be genetic.
Oh, I'm passing it on to my kids now, and my kids know. You know, my kids can identify the universal monsters by me pantomiming each one of them, and they can identify Freddy and Jason by their face.
Oh, I do like the talking about today, more current. I do like the remakes of. Like Dracula. I thought Frankenstein wasn't bad, only for the fact that it told the story, not the Boris Karloff movie.
You mean you're talking about the Kenneth Branagh one? In
yeah, it told the actual story, more like the novel. You know, that you know, I think that was very good to show people.
Well, that's interesting.
The actual story. The same with Dracula, to show the actual story.
What's interesting about that is there's a lot of people, sometimes even me, who have a lot of problems with all of these horror movies being constantly remade. Yeah. It's interesting because you got to see all of these original ones, not Dracula and Frankenstein, that's earlier, obviously. Yeah. But you got to see a lot of these originals when they first came out,
yeah.
And now you're seeing them all being remade constantly,
right?
You know?
Right, but a lot of remakes are good because there's a lot of technology now that they could use,
sure.
And makeup that they didn't have back then. A shining example is really The Fly.
I mean, the
original Fly with the guy with the something on his head, you know, it's a mask.
What was his name? Peter something, right?
Oh, I forget.
Well, the character's name.
But Jeff Goldblum, the Fly they did, yep. With him, that was incredible. That was really showing what could happen if you did something like that. But was that really true to life?
Well, that and The Thing are probably the two
Thing was
high watermarks of remakes.
Great remake. Right? And on the disc that I have, they show how they do all that stuff, too. They're really great makeup guys, the effects they created in that one.
Well, I want to thank you, Dad, for sitting down on this Easter Sunday to be a part of this conversation.
I'm glad I still remember these things.
I'm
glad I have a memory.
That's a good sign. Well, we'll have to come back and do it in a few more years.
Oh, yeah. I'm not making any promises.
We'll see how we do it then. But this has been fun. This is the kind of the origins of where it all comes from for me. So I'm glad to be able to talk to you about this stuff. Thank you.
Glad to give it to you.